The Politics, Politics, Politics podcast. Brought to you, as always, by TakePoliticsSeriously.com. Hey, look, you might be tired of all these crybabies on all these other news networks talking about whether they love the president, whether or not they hate the president. You want to know what you get here? You get the real dope. You get someone who's not going to lie to you. Someone who's not going to pander to you. Somebody who's not going to feed you cake all day and call it healthy. No, we're going to have a good time. We're going to talk about foot fetishes. We're going to talk about Estonia. Of course, we're going to talk about the speeches. But you want to know what? We're going to talk about politics in a way that no other media does. That's the jury guarantee. Do you want to support that? Do you think that that's good? Do you think that that's something that we should have more of? Well, then head on over to TakePoliticsSeriously.com. If you're paying me $3 a week, dude, it's a cup of coffee. You get three podcasts a week. Not only this one that's always free, but also one on Monday, also one on Friday. Little mini-sodes. Just to make sure that there's no little bit of news that goes uncovered by the PX3 watchful eye. Enough talking about how we support the show, huh? What do you say we just do the damn thing? Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Politics, Politics, Politics podcast. My name is Justin Robert Young. I will be your humble host, bringing you through the week that was in politics. And man, do we have a doozy for you. Government shutdown still. I told somebody last week, go to Yellowstone and open an illegal Arby's. Does anybody have a bootleg Arby's open in Joshua Tree yet? There's no law anymore. We can do whatever the fuck we want. We're here without supervision. Somebody, can we just spray paint the side of the White House? Like, what are the limits to our power? In all seriousness, the shutdown is something that is about to stop getting polite and start getting real. Rainy day funds are about to run out. We're about to see some actual consequences to the fact that the government is shut down. You will notice that up till now, the reason why the environmental crisis of the parks, and I'm saying that somewhat facetiously, just because my suspicion is that the breathless coverage afforded the fact that the parks do not have supervision right now probably brought out more people to clean the parks than they did wild animals shitting on the floor and throwing newspaper at each other. But now we are going to see some consequences. When a shutdown moves into like a month, that's when budgets start to run out. You're going to see things that aren't, you're going to see headlines that aren't if the shutdown reaches, but now that the shutdown has reached. You know, for example, food stamps, if it goes out, if it goes over a month, you know, people who are on EBT, there's a shortfall for February. You know, they had about $3 billion in rainy day funds. They got $4 billion worth of people that need EBT. We've already seen some of the TSA people calling out, air traffic controllers. I got a buddy that's a air traffic controller, makes great money. Someone's got to remind me to make fun of him for being broke. I got to just like show a bank transfer going through and be like, oh, high five for everybody who's got bank transfers. Oh, not so fast, air traffic controller. it's bad. This is bad and getting worse. And in fact, it's so bad that last night, both of each side of this issue went to the airways, national airways, covered by all the major networks and many of the big cable ones. It was Donald Trump's first Oval Office address. He has not done this. Considering how much he's been on television, I would have thought that this would have happened by now, but nope, it was not. Here is the opening 30 seconds.
Tonight, I am speaking to you because there is a growing humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border. Every day, Customs and Border Patrol agents encounter thousands of illegal immigrants trying to enter our country. We are out of space to hold them, and we have no way to promptly return them back home to their country. America proudly welcomes millions of lawful immigrants.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. All right. Hold on. Look, I have listened to quite a bit of Donald Trump. I've listened to speeches. I've listened to, all sorts of other stuff, right? I've listened to his press scrums. This is, right now, the most sensitive I've ever heard him talk about immigration. He led his speech to the nation with the humanitarian crisis of unfettered illegal immigration. Now, dare I say, if he had framed it like this, over the holidays, and basically turned the idea of, kids are being locked up. Look at all these poor mothers with their children trying to get across in these caravans, in these hovels in Tijuana. And said, look, my heart bleeds for them. We need to make sure that there is an orderly system in which, A, they can legally immigrate to the United States, but also we want to make sure that they're not in this situation anymore. Then maybe we would be in a different position. However, that's not what he's done. And he spent a fair amount of this speech, I would say pretty much up to about the 4 minute mark. In fact, we're just going to skip ahead to 4 minutes just so we can catch the end of this. Because, friends, I would describe the president's speech from the Oval Office last night as that of a mullet. Yes, there was a very compassionate business up front.
For a physical barrier. At the request of Democrats, it will be a steel barrier rather than a concrete wall.
Whoa! Oh, my God. At the request of a conciliatory Donald Trump on the issue of immigration. A conciliatory Donald Trump at the request of Democrats because he lives to serve. Be our guest. Be our guest. Write your own immigration law. I am here to do the bidding of my friends across the aisle. Donald Trump, here and now, I am talking you. All right. But that really only goes up to about halfway. This is a 9 minute and 31 second speech. He is 4 minutes and 11 seconds in. Because like a mullet, it is not business all the way through. Oh, no, no. In this particular mullet, it is a Breitbart comment section in the back because he does the greatest hits of hardline immigration rhetoric.
Some have suggested a barrier is immoral. Then why do wealthy politicians build walls, fences, and gates around their homes? They don't build walls because they hate the people on the outside, but because they love the people on the inside.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. This is right out of the playbook. This is every, like, if you were, if the underscore Donald was a concert venue, as soon as you get into walls don't work, well, look at this wall that's worked. Like, that would be the opening strum, the opening guitar key. And everybody would go, woo! It would just be like 40,000 Pepe heads with their tongues flapping. But then here's the big one. This is always what gets everybody's blood pumping in the immigration hardliner greatest hits.
Recently charged with murder for killing, beheading, and dismembering his neighbor. In Maryland, MS-13 gang members who arrived in the United States as unaccompanied minors were arrested and charged last year after viciously stabbing and beating a 16-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah. That's it. There's the good stuff. That's Donald Trump doing the hardline immigration two-step. Not only is it a big problem, but people are getting murdered. The big key finale here in this particular speech is, when will Democrats understand that the carnage has to stop? When will be enough blood on their hands to do something? It was a strange one, man. It was odd. It was odd that he led with such a conciliatory tone. And then went right there. I mean, like, the end didn't surprise me. I was expecting the end. But it's I gotta say, it was the best speech out of the two. Because here was the other one that happened last night. This is the rebuttal. Normally, Oval Office addresses do not get a rebuttal, right? Normally, Oval Office addresses are just what they are. They're just the president speaking to the nation, and that's that. But then again, this is a fairly politically charged moment to have an Oval Office address. So, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, the Democrats on the other side of this particular issue, decided that they wanted to speak to the nation as well. And so they did. It's a bit weird, though. It's a bit odd. They are in a hallway, not unlike The Shining. And they are sharing a podium. They're the one podium gang. and they're looking very, very comically stern at the camera, as if they are grounding you. You are being grounded by Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. And they take, in what had to be a tortured negotiation, they don't go back and forth. They're not the Beastie Boys. They're not Run DMC. Nancy Pelosi goes for a little bit, and then Chuck Schumer goes for a little bit. The rumor is, or at least the thought is, that they were expecting Donald Trump to play the nuclear option, which is to declare a state of emergency about immigration, and then use Department of Defense funds to build a wall. Because what they wound up saying was just, we disagree with the president and we're not going to build a wall. And that the president should end the shutdown. I mean, geez, look at, I know for audio people, if you have not seen this, you really just need to look at Chuck Schumer's very stern face. It's a very odd look. I'm gonna zoom in on it right now for the video, folks. So if you want to watch this, then please head on over to our YouTube channel. Again, that is YouTube.com/JustinRobertYoung. but it's a, I mean, I don't know. I don't even know how to describe it. He just is just looking dead into your soul. And he's got like one eyebrow kind of cocked. And he's not. He looks like the worst parent that you'd want to meet when you were taking a girlfriend out for the first time in high school. And he's slowly nodding, but he's angry. The right eye is angrier than the left eye. There's a lot going on there. There's a lot going on. I'm scared of you. I'm scared of you, Chuck Schumer. I don't know what else to say other than you scare me. And I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I did. He does look like Walter White. Zax's EMK says he looks like Walter White. You're damn right. Well, I'll bet you that all this worked itself out, right? You know, they both got their yah-yahs out on television. They both said that they were going to meet with the other one the next day. So I'm sure that that's exactly what happened, that they had a nice little conversation. And now we are well on our way to the shutdown being over, right? Oh, wrong. This from CNN. Trump walks out of shutdown meeting, calling talks a total waste of time. President Donald Trump walked out of discussions to end a partial government shutdown, now in its third week, calling the talks with congressional Democrats a total waste of time. Quote, this is a tweet from @RealDonaldTrump. Just left a meeting with Chuck and Nancy, a total waste of time. I asked what is going to happen in 30 days if I quickly open things up. Are you going to approve border security, which includes a wall or a steel barrier? Nancy said no. I said bye-bye, nothing else works. This, of course, was followed by quotes by Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. Chuck says, unfortunately, just got up and walked out. He asked Speaker Pelosi, will you agree to my wall? She said no. He just got up and said, then we have nothing to discuss. And he walked out. Again, we saw a temper tantrum because he couldn't get his way. He just walked out of the meeting. Oh, apparently there was something about candy here. I didn't know about this. I'm going to read this for the first time. This is a segment on the show I like to call Reading Things for the First Time. Trump was in a chummy mood when he entered the Situation Room, according to a source familiar with how things unfolded. The president had passed out candy to attendees, Butterfinger and Baby Ruth bars, as well as M&Ms. Trump told congressional leaders that they would find a letter at each of their chairs, a copy of the budget request by the office management and budget had put together for the congressional staff on Sunday's meeting that laid out the administration's shutdown priorities. Oh, man. I'll say it one more time. I don't understand why both sides of this coin, don't start floating deals. Float a deal. I was on the Andrew Heaton podcast again this week on Monday. Go ahead and check it out. Something's off with Andrew Heaton. Your boy Justin Robert Young is on there. If you like me on there, please make sure you let him know so I continue to be on there. Now, one thing we talked about is a few fast facts. The $5 billion that Donald Trump wants for a wall will not build a wall. That is barely a fucking down payment on the structure that he wants to build. So whether or not you think that this is a good idea, understand that what is being asked for right now is not that idea. It is a down payment. It is layaway for that idea. Now, if you're the Democrats, you're in the catbird seat. Nothing happens without you saying it happens. So, you can ask for things. Rumor is that DACA's already there. That the Dreamers, you can settle the lives of the kids that were brought into this country that have never known another country but are still technically illegal. Now, Open Bayou says DACA for the wall was the float last time, but hardline Republicans said no. Yeah, well, that was before they lost the midterms. And that was before there was a government shutdown there. And that was before Donald Trump started lighting them up on Twitter. I mean, I think that there is a possibility that this could happen. Specifically, if you have more Democrats voting for it in the Senate. Democrats control the House. If Democrats decided to vote for a wall for DACA thing, they could make it happen in the Senate. The question is if Democrats have any interest in making any deal with Donald Trump, or are they literally just here to embarrass him? So, if that's the case, and you and your point is, which I think is a valid one, fuck him, him being Trump, not a penny for the wall. We don't want to make any deal with him. He just needs to open shit up. Well, if you're just punishing him, then how different is the current Democratic situation to what was happening with Obama and the Republicans? They're just being obstinate. If the goal is to just damage him for the midterms. You know, that was looked at as something that was bad. That was a bad thing that was happening. But I guess it's different if you really, really hate Trump. Trump was a lot more hated than Obama was. Not to say that Obama wasn't hated by many, but just in terms of the numbers, Donald Trump is a less popular person than Obama was, or less popular president by polling. So maybe that just makes more political sense now. All right. So that's that. We have nothing going on. We have literally no hope for progress. I try not to be cynical about these things, but man, sometimes it is hard to see the silver lining when literally nobody seems to want anything to get done. If you would like these kinds of political observations in your life 5 days a week in your inbox, then I would encourage you greatly to sign up for the free political newsletter at freepoliticalnewsletter.com. It is a great way to start your day, IMO. 5 stories a day, 5 days a week, mostly gifts, some hot takes. I'm trying to do original gifts now. If you have any good gif maker, gif apps, hit me up. TheYoungAmerican@gmail.com. But also sign up for the free political newsletter. I have over 1,500 subs, which is nice. It's pretty good. We're chugging along. The goal is to get to 5,000 this year. I want 5,000 people on that newsletter. That's a healthy newsletter, man. Businesses have been built by 5,000-person newsletters. So go ahead and tell a friend. FreePoliticalNewsletter.com. One of my favorite scenes and one of my favorite shows, Arrested Development, is when the comical attorney of the Bluth family, Barry Zuckerkorn, does something buffoonish, and the patriarch of the family, George Sr., puts his head in his hands and says, "I have the worst fucking attorneys." It's a funny moment, and one that I'm almost positive was repeated by one Paul Manafort yesterday, as his own lawyers did something so stupid. Here's what Paul Manafort's lawyers did. Paul Manafort's lawyers wrote a filing that included redacted copy, okay? That's like, you know, when you see something that's not supposed to be public, then you see like the black bars over it. This used to be physically, right? When there were things that were printed out, you would actually physically run a marker on top of it. Now in a digital world, you got functions on your keyboard for it. Apparently, Manafort's attorneys literally just put a black mark over the redacted material. Meaning you could still highlight the black bar, copy, paste, and everything behind the black bar would be visible. I have the worst fucking attorneys. That has to be what he said, right? That's, I mean, like, rarely can art imitate life on such a level than to feel how Paul Manafort felt about his lawyers yesterday. All right, so what was redacted? We now know what is redacted. That's the real news here. The real news is that, according to Robert Mueller, Paul Manafort lied about going to Europe and sharing with somebody that had connections to Putin internal Trump polling data. Now, if this is the case, well, let me put it this way. If this is just a thing that is part of that case, then, you know, it demonstrates a lot of stuff that we kind of already knew about Paul Manafort. It demonstrates that he had connections to the Russian government. It demonstrates that he was in the pocket financially of one of the oligarchs. It shows that he indeed, this is not a shock, as the head of the Trump campaign had access to the internal workings of the Trump campaign. And that there might have been a little quid pro quo. Now, here's what it doesn't show. It doesn't show that Paul Manafort did that at the behest of Donald Trump. That would be something that would be needed probably for him to be impeached. And it doesn't show that it then went the other way, that Russia gave the Trump campaign things that the Trump campaign then acted on. The one thing that the Trump campaign will be able to do, I mean, the one thing that they have to be kissing their lucky stars, I'm mixing metaphors, kissing their own ass about, I don't know why, is that something that you would do if you're really excited? Would you bend over and kiss your own ass? It seems like something an old Irish grandmother. Oh, you kiss your own ass for that. If anybody was wondering what my impression of an old Irish grandmother was. There it is. The thing that the Trump campaign can hang their hat on is that they fired Paul Manafort really quickly. Remember that Paul Manafort was campaign head number two. Corey Lewandowski, Paul Manafort, and then the tag team of Conway and Bannon. And there seems to be evidence out there that Donald Trump thought Paul Manafort was bad and was a crook. I think it was one of the Inside the Trump Campaign books made that point. So when we, whatever the Mueller report comes in, right, those charges will then enter a political arena. And so everything that I look at with the Mueller investigation is not whether or not it's bad, not whether or not it's bad looking, but is it impeachable? Impeachment means that you are now taking something in to the court of public opinion. In my mind, if the question is that Paul Manafort did things he should not have done that may or may not have benefited the Trump administration, and he was then fired, I don't think the court of public opinion comes back and says the president needs to leave. Now, we don't know everything. All we know what Paul Manafort's worst fucking attorneys left out there in the open. That's all we know. I think this is bad looks. This is a bad look for Paul Manafort. That's for goddamn sure. But I don't know if it's impeachable. I don't think it's impeachable. At least that's my opinion. All right. Well, let's actually talk about 2020. One of the biggest names here in 2020 is Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, somebody who was quite the visible face during the Kavanaugh hearing. Well, apparently, he's not only gearing up for the White House. Cory Booker is gearing up for love. Oh. Rosario Dawson and Cory Booker, an item. Apparently they went to see the Broadway musical I Love You. Quote, in a very, very sweet and improvised moment on Saturday while attending Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway, Rosario Dawson briefly serenaded New Jersey Senator Cory Booker during a cast meet and greet, telling him, I love you, an onlooker confirms to People. The source says Dawson sang, I love you, te amo, Spanish for I love you, to Booker in an impromptu, made-up, on-the-spot tune. According to Page Six, which first reported the news, the two were meeting the cast after the show. The 39-year-old actress and the politician, 49, were joined by two special little guests, Booker's niece and Dawson's daughter, Lola. While it was Booker's second time seeing the show, it was Dawson's first and the first ever Broadway production for Lola, according to the source. Now, you know that I like reading political tea leaves anywhere that we might, but Rosario Dawson is somebody that is very progressive. Rosario Dawson, when I was covering the Democratic National Convention, was protesting Hillary Clinton's nomination. She was left of Hillary Clinton. She was a Bernie supporter. Cory Booker's problem is that he appears too middle of the road. He is too much in the Clinton mold. He is too liberal and not progressive. So, you know, you ever know a guy and you're like, man, that dude's kind of a herb. And then he starts dating a friend of yours, like a lady that's like really cool. And you're like, oh, man, I think I should give this dude another shot. If she sees something in him, maybe I have judged this man too early. Is that enough to at least allow the progressive left to rethink Cory Booker? To not totally define him as being the thing that they hate? Or at the very least, be somebody that they're willing to settle for? Or is that a wound that not even the night nurse can mend? I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. You think that that's just, I mean, come on. We come to the politics show so we can hear about the important stuff. We don't want this gossipy trash. Don't bring your Page Six gossip to this hollowed podcast, Justin. I know. I can hear you yelling at me in my ears even as I record this live on twitch.tv/JustinRYoung. So let's get serious. A foot fetishist debunked fake Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez nudes. An early contender for race to be somehow worse than 2016 contest, 2019 has come out swinging. Here's the headline. A fake nude of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was debunked by foot fetishists. So apparently there was a photo of a woman in a bath with her feet up. It looked like maybe a weed vape in her hand and possibly in a reflection some titties. Here was the foot fetish community came to the rescue, though. A Redditor wrote, the person in the photo isn't her. We don't know how many people actually believed it. It was her in the first place. And in some of the forums where the images were posted, people were already comparing feet and questioning whether it's really her. But we know for sure that a user on a site called WikiFeet, a site devoted to foot fetish photos of celebrities and public figures, there's a small collection of Ocasio-Cortez's feet on the site, from photos of public appearances where she's wearing sandals or open-toed shoes. That user cross-references the r/drama photo with known images of Ocasio-Cortez's feet posted in WikiFeet to determine that they're from a different person. Quote, I'm a contributor to WikiFeet and even I have never seen a second toe like that. Reddit user jokes_on_u commented. They then linked to a known photo of Ocasio-Cortez's feet and implied that the feet in the r/drama post couldn't possibly belong to her. But folks, here is the kicker. When asked how Jokes on You knew for sure that it was not Ocasio-Cortez's feet, here's the quote of the week. I've sucked on enough toes in my life to recognize when something doesn't look right. Oh, fucking A. Who doesn't love life? All right. Enough about Cory Booker's dick. Enough about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's fake feet. Let's get into what you guys really want to hear. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, long awaited, we have an update on the Estonian election. One of our favorite members of Diamond Club, Estonian resident T2T2, has written in exactly what's going on. He begins his missive. It's 2019, and the Estonian parliamentary elections are 2 months away. So perfect time for all parties to start the show. The two biggest parties in Estonia are the Estonian Center Party. Centrism as a historical favoring of the Russian population and been mainly in opposition until the current cabinet and is polling at 31%. And the Estonian Reform Party, liberalism dominant from the early 90s to 2015, but has been slipping lately, has been polling at 21%. But they've been boring so far, so let's get to the good stuff. Since the last elections, the Conservative People's Party of Estonia, the EKRE, has been growing as a national conservative right-wing populist party, 8.1% result in the last election. Saturday, they published their election platform, featuring the usual right-wing populist stuff, lower taxes, canceling Europe projects like Rail Batalica, quota refugees, defining marriage between different gendered people, throwing out still not ratified border agreements with Russia and demanding back land from the Tartu Peace Treaty, which currently is populated by Russians, asking the United States for $1 billion in military aid, the usual populist stuff, which leads every other party saying they don't want to work with them. Now, in Estonia, I found this fascinating. There is a law. After registration of candidates ends, no more political ads are allowed to be displayed outside. All right? So dig that. Imagine if at the point in America where you are officially registered, you would not be allowed to have a display advertisement for your campaign. So, let's say you were an enterprising young party. How would you create a political ad without actually creating a political ad? People who are watching us live on YouTube and Twitch are now seeing a series of bus ads. They are in another language, so I will explain to you what they read. There's a blue circle. There's basically six panels. The left three have blue circles with text in the middle. The right three have red circles with text in the middle. The blue circle reads, "This is only for Estonians." And in the red circle, it reads, "This is only for Russians." Underneath both posters, in case of questions, call, and then there's a phone number depending on the language. Calling the number listed on the Estonian side, a pre-recorded message with a disguised voice says that the elections were taking place on the 3rd of March, where they would be running, and stress that we Estonians definitely have to stick together. Make sure you are standing on the right side. Calling the number listed on the Russian side, the same pre-recorded message is played in Russian, stressing instead that Russians have to stick together. Monday evening, they were vandalized with stickers that said different languages, one people. During the entire day, all of the Estonian media were contacting all of the parties to ask who it was. The only party ignoring the question was Estonia 200, a party that was formed 3 months ago after publishing a manifesto for Estonians' 100th birthday and how Estonia can last another 100 years based on the opinions of successful businessmen and field experts. So they were behind it. Estonia 200 organized a press conference saying that the ad is about how children go to separate schools and kindergartens, we work in separate places, live in separate city districts, and watch separate TV channels. According to the party chairwoman, Estonia 200 itself, not an advertising company, was responsible for the entire campaign and was approximately a 3,000 euro expense. So for 3,000 bucks, they got ads in one tram stop in the capital, yet managed to cause the entire country to blow up, and in a way you wouldn't expect from a party that so far has been about using experts and automation, as in syncretic politics, social liberalism, economic liberalism, and technocracy, or technocracy. Then again, T2 comes to a conclusion. They also registered a website which shows the shadow government, and the website is all about how they will make a shadow government to run the country. We salute T2T2 for his continued updates on the Estonian election. Of course, to swing back to our side of the fence, we do have maybe a little way that we can gauge how all this shutdown stuff is playing out. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We can go ahead and recognize data science the only way that we know how on this show. Folks, ladies and gentlemen, I want to bring you into a presidential approval rating. Get on the floor if you got that booty. This is a Economist YouGov poll from January 6th to January 8th with 1,299 registered voters, all charting the approval of the current president of the United States, Donald J. Trump. Stepping up first to the stage, with 44%, let's go ahead and give a big round of applause for approve. But your headliner, please, with 53% of the vote, give a round of applause for this. That again is 44% approve, 53% disapprove for the presidential job approval. Now, just to give you context here, that is a better result for Trump. Over the most recent approval ratings, he has seen a jump from minus 15% to minus 5 and minus 9. Rasmussen, which is always his best poll, has him at minus 5%, so a 5% spread. Oh, sorry, wait, hold on. That's a 9% spread. Rusty here in 2019. And this is a 9%, but it's single digits. And he has not had a single digit poll since, well, I mean, late December. Economists had him at minus 8. But that's not a bad one. I mean, like right now, the Real Clear Politics average is at 11.6, which is not good, but it's certainly not his worst over the last year. All right, everybody, what do you say we get into? But your emails! You can always go ahead and email the show right here at theyoungamerican@gmail.com. Again, theyoungamerican@gmail.com. Our first email came in from Rishi from Ann Arbor. I've never seen Trump so presidential as when in the middle of his border wall address, he smiled and slightly hesitated as he was referencing Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi's rebuttal and swallowed a joke instead of veering into the veering the address off message. He looked like he was about to little brother the shit out of them and then decided better of it and instead smiled for the family photo. I don't know if I would say that it was the most any more presidential than he is normally act, but he didn't call them names. So at least there's that. And also, I'm shocked that he was conciliatory. He out and out said, I downgraded from a wall to a fence because you asked me. That fairly rarely happens. Connor writes, I'm from the UK, and needless to say, American politics are far more exciting than ours. What is the American take on the almighty Brexit issue going on? Is it something that you don't understand, or is it just crazy Europeans doing their thing? I try to follow it as much as I can. I don't think I have a full handle on exactly everything that's happening. I was most dialed in when there was the possibility that Theresa May was going to have the vote of no confidence called or be voted out with a vote of no confidence. But to be honest, if you were to ask me right now what the fuck's going on, I don't know if I'll know. If in the next few weeks, you know, as we get closer and closer to the no Brexit or the hard Brexit, the no deal situation, then I'll probably pay attention a little bit more. But I don't know enough about the back and forth to really keep much of a track on it. We do another segment on another podcast that I do, Jury Daily, called High Thoughts. And so Nick wrote in a political high thought. Libtard is what people call liberals, but no one has coined the Republican Rugrats-themed slur, reptard. Joey writes, I know you've said in the past that you don't like cable news, but what's your opinion on local news? And what about the national news on broadcast channels like CBS or ABC? Joey, in general, look, I make fun of television news a lot, specifically saying that they're not journalists, and I'm mostly kidding about that. I think local news is important, mostly just because there's not a lot of it. And anytime that you do have local news, I think, look, all politics is local. Proximity is one of the keys to news value. So I think that local news is very important. As for national broadcasts, like CBS or ABC, I think they're kind of outdated. I just think they're kind of serving a need that we fill other ways these days. But, you know, God bless them. I really can't tell you. I don't watch them enough to know if they're doing things wrong. I guess that would be my honest answer. Caleb writes, longtime listener, first time emailer. Many conservative women I discuss politics with tend to think that liberal women are dangerous and or crazy. This leads me to conclude that there will be no female Democratic president, as any woman with the name recognition has been so demonized by the right that people are turned against them like Pelosi. It's our only hope for a female president in the near future, a conservative woman. I would say it's more likely that we have a female president than a male president right now on the left. I think the left would do it. I mean, look, there's going to be a lot running now. They're going to have a real puncher shot to beat the president. So, yeah, my bet would be on the Democratic ladies. Miles writes, I bet at least one candidate in this election will post a picture of themselves eating a brownie with the caption, quote, great to be back in D.C. or another state where weed is legal. Oh, yeah. So we were talking last week about how all the cool, hip candidates are going to do cool, hip things on live streams. Miles suggests that somebody's going to wink, wink, eat an edible on the IG. Sean writes, can you explain why Trump needs to build a wall to win in 2020? I wasn't aware that the swing voters cared about the wall or believed that Mexico was going to pay for it. I always thought the people that the wall resonated with was his hardcore base. How could he lose those people if he doesn't build a wall? I doubt building the wall would draw in many new people. Heck, if Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, or Ohio flip from 2016, then Trump loses. None of those states have a border with Mexico, and all of them have an industrial base that is feeling the effects of the trade war. Lastly, does the $5 billion number still apply to the metal fence? If so, is that at pre-trade war metal prices? Could the trade war have driven up domestic steel prices to the point where the fence would cost like $8 billion? Good question. So, how can he lose if he doesn't build the wall? If you don't have a hardcore base, then you don't have the ability to go for cross, you know, the independence in the middle. You got to take care of your home first. This is politics 101. Take care of your hardest of hardcores and then branch out. So if he alienates the hardcores, that's a problem in general. Number two, you're right that if any of those swing states flip, then Trump loses. However, you seem to be, Sean, you seem to be in the mindset that the trade war is forever. Donald Trump can end the trade war whenever he wants. And he can declare victory however he wants. If you don't think that he's going to do that before the election, you got another thing coming. Kevin writes, I see those who aren't as adept at social media taking part in the newest challenge, which if done today would be the Bird Box Challenge. But what other fads going to be on at a time, and it will most likely end in an embarrassment, just like Pokemon Go to the polls. What is the first challenge and candidate combination that we are going to see? And finally, Swervum writes, while I find the Ocasio-Cortez mania to be a little overdone, I was thinking while listening to your discussion of the progressive field in the Democratic primaries and the name recognition slash excitement challenge facing some of the non-Bernie candidates, and I had a thought. While AOC lacks the experience and age to make a run for the White House, she certainly has the name recognition and credibility in the true believers camp that I could see the candidate looking for her endorsement. It seems like she could do a lot for the name recognition of someone like Sherrod Brown or Amy Klobuchar, or improving the progressive bona fides of somebody like Kamala Harris. Do you think that the AOC cash in some of her political capital to be a kingmaker, or will she be keeping her powder dry? This is my favorite email of the week. Thank you so much for sending it in, Swervum. I very much think that Ocasio-Cortez is going to be a very, very sought after endorsement. And if I'm her, I'm looking at my next step. Because you know that that one podium gang? Remember them? We were talking about them earlier. Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi. If I'm Ocasio-Cortez, and I have gotten the kind of media attention that I've gotten already, I have the new wave of the Democratic Party congressionally in my hands, I'm looking at that podium and I'm saying, which one do I want to be? Left or right? Because I'm already in the House. I already have the momentum that if when the time is right, I can challenge Nancy Pelosi. I can be the speaker. But, I mean, that shit's the House. I'm a representative from New York. I'm known for taking down old men in power. Huh. Left side of that podium has a old man who's been there for a very, very, very long time. Wonder how secure Chuck Schumer thinks his seat is. You can email me, theyoungamerican@gmail.com. Music has been provided by Valesco and Trop Killers. You can follow me at Justin R. Young everywhere, and you can download archived episodes of this show at BonerWars.com. Folks, that about wraps it up. I want to thank everybody for joining us. A reminder, some shows talk about politics. Others talk about politics. Still more, they talk about politics. But this one, this show right here, oh, homie, this is the only show that talks about all three.
Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.